Well, I'd like to start, I guess, with an initial overview of why you started Ubuntu Core. If that's part of the presentation, then feel free to go into it. But that's, I guess, that would be the good starting point. Like, what was its purpose, and why did Canonical decide to do it, to introduce it?
That's great. So let me answer that question, and I'll just refer to slides randomly as slides sort of illustrate the picture. I think perhaps slide 3 might be a good starting point. Why did we create Ubuntu Core? That's actually addressing a very specific need in the market, and that is to create a developer-friendly operating system environment for this explosion of things, this explosion of devices, smart devices that we're really in the midst of creating at this point. I give a presentation sometimes to a developer audience where on a slide I'll show a one-line command that you can run nmap on your local network. You run nmap, scan your entire local network with the --- OS fingerprint option. And nmap will do its best to guess what operating system, down to even some specific kernel versions, of what's running on your home network. And nmap does this through some smart ways, just the way it forms packets and looking at the responses. It's got a database of heuristics where it can do a pretty good job of guessing what version of what operating system are on all of these devices around your house. And if you're somewhat security conscious and you run that, I can almost guarantee that the results will both amaze and frighten you. You'll find a ton of devices on your home network that you had no idea were running an operating system, a Linux operating system, and in some cases, a very old Linux 2.4, 2.6 operating system that has never been updated. Frankly, it's been, you know, it was built 5, maybe 10 years ago and has never seen an update. So at its very core, the reason we created Ubuntu Core was for security reasons, honestly, to create an operating system that could be updated by a trusted operating systems vendor at scale, en masse, throughout the entire world. But to do so with the developer focus, the balance of usability that Ubuntu developers know and understand and feel and have come to expect. If you've tried to develop an application for an embedded system, something like one of the more traditional embedded OSs, a Wind River or a Monte Vista or something like that, it's nothing like the Ubuntu developer experience. So here I would say maybe slide 9 is the other slide that's quite pertinent here. Just the way that we put this together. We put it together in a way that the kernel and the OS are themselves minimal and designed for that embedded use case, but applications themselves are built and constructed and developed according to principles that are far more common in the Ubuntu development world. So I think that's the
Sure. No. Just so from a kind of business perspective as well, obviously the IoT world is a very multifaceted world. There are companies making quality, well-supported products, and there's a lot of companies making cheap rubbish that they release and then forget about. So from a business decision as well, is this something you will feel is sort of supplemental to your desktop business, or do you actually feel that it's going to be probably bigger than the desktop business?
That's a great question. When you said rubbish, are you talking about the hardware or the software or both?
Both.
that's funny. So I'll answer the latter part of your question, which I think is pretty easy, and then I'd like to go deeper into the first part. The latter part of your question was, you know, is this going to supplement or replace or be bigger or smaller than our desktop business? The opportunity here is tremendous compared to the desktop business. I'm sure if you followed Ubuntu, the story of Ubuntu and Canonical since its inception in 2004, we really started out as a desktop OS. And in 2004, we set out with this mantra to supplant Windows as the primary desktop, to really bring Linux to the fore. And we created something pretty incredible in the Ubuntu desktop, a desktop that definitely caught the developer winds. You know, we definitely have always had the developer winds to our back. Where, quite frankly, I think it's you know, in retrospect or in hindsight, what we never did quite achieve was breaking through with a Linux desktop that actually, at tremendous scale, in the billions of user scale, replaced a Windows or a Mac desktop. That didn't happen. As much as we would have liked it to happen, and as much as that would have, you know, really changed the perhaps the landscape of the Linux desktop, it wasn't to be. Now, what has happened since 2004 is the complete and utter prevalence of Linux in everywhere and everything you can possibly imagine. And that's a lot of Ubuntu, but it's also a lot of Chrome OS and a lot of Android. So to an extent, Linux did show up. It's just it wasn't Canonical and Ubuntu alone. Now, all that said, the real opportunity here is, and this is back to the heart of that latter part of your question, the real opportunity here is to provide that operating system that absolutely is consistent and secure and developer friendly on those devices. Now, you mentioned devices and you know the experience, and some of those are pretty rough. You know, there's a big difference, I would say, between the industrial side of the Internet of Things and the consumer, the commercial side, right? So it's easy to talk about drones. I think I had a drone picture on slide 3. There's a big difference between the consumer drone you buy for $99 that was built in China and the drone that is being used to survey a construction site or deliver pesticides or fertilizer at an industrial scale to an agricultural development. Those are two very different experiences. We're working with vendors on both sides of that spectrum. I would say that I'm quite a bit more optimistic about the commercial opportunity around the industrial devices. And it doesn't matter what sort of IoT thing you're doing.
Yeah, it's a fool's errand trying to convince the kind of small, mass manufactured sort of Chinese business IoT devices to do any better, because it's not really their model.
That's right. It's a different business model, and you know, you got to focus on there. You know, the focus is on margins as opposed to quality,
sure,
and scale as opposed.
And just shifting quickly to a slight horizontal industry, because you say Linux is everywhere, and one other area that Ubuntu Core is in. Although you sort of mention it briefly kind of on the product page, but actually I would imagine it's also a significant part of Ubuntu Core's rollout is in container deployments as well. So not necessarily IoT world. And how much are you pushing towards that instead of, well, I think I'm having a complete and total blank for a second. Alpine, that's the other kind of popular container Linux. So how much do you balance the kind of push into IoT versus the push into container installments as well?
Yeah, the great part of the story, Chris, is that the two feed off of one another quite well. The technology is the exact same. It's the same engineering team that's building that immutable, read-only, super secure, minimal OS that's useful for drones and robots and self-driving cars. It's also useful in the cloud. Now, the one thing that we're not going to do is completely replace the Ubuntu experience underneath the hundreds of millions of Ubuntu instances that run in the cloud any given month. That scale is such that we're doing something right with traditional Debian-based devs, Ubuntu, you know, just the traditional Linux operating system where root can do whatever root wants to do inside of that system. That we cannot and will not take that away from a tremendous user and developer base. What we are doing is we're supplementing that traditional Ubuntu with Ubuntu Core as an option in the cloud. And it does make a really nice, I used all of those same adjectives that I'll use again, immutable, secure, read-only, transactionally updated OS that stays underneath the containers. And then you do the interesting work in these sort of disposable, ephemeral containers. Mm. Now, you mentioned Alpine here. Alpine is focused very specifically on the OS inside of the container. Yep. What I just talked about up until this point is the OS under the container, mm. where Ubuntu Core is an excellent, call it hypervisor.
Okay,
you know,
okay. Right.
You see that?
Yeah, I get you. Yep.
The other alternatives. I mean, if you wanted to know who the competition is in this space, it's fundamentally Red Hat Atomic and CoreOS Container Linux as a host. Now, inside of the guest, sure, there certainly is some noise around Alpine, which is a Docker acquisition as a minimal OS inside of the container. We've done quite a bit of work to take Ubuntu and trim it down to something that is Alpine-sized, a minimal Ubuntu image. We continue to reduce the footprint of the Ubuntu that runs inside of the container. Now, it is a little bit bigger than Alpine, but not much. Mm. Basically, what we've defined, the minimal Ubuntu inside of the container is the smallest number of binaries required to be able to apt-get install anything else that you might want inside of that container. Mm. So it's really just like a very small bootstrap container.
Yep. Yep.
Now, users, developers in particular, do like the Ubuntu Docker container or container inside OS inside of that container because it's such a consistent experience with what they might be running on bare metal in a virtual machine, perhaps on some of these devices that are running around. And so from that perspective, that consistency is super valuable. We're actually working with a number of customers who are setting up shadow devices in the cloud. It's become a somewhat common practice for especially these super expensive industrial type devices to basically run a copy of that device as a VM or a container in the public cloud or in a private cloud for backup purposes. Sometimes changes are tested in the shadow of the device in the cloud before they're rolled out to the device. It's actually quite a powerful developer methodology to have a copy of that device in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. I've got one more question anyway. We'll see where it goes on Ubuntu Core, and then we'll talk a little bit about snaps. Just in regard to where Ubuntu Core fits into the whole other kind of Ubuntu ecosystem, so I guess two questions on this. One would be, how much of, this might be a naive question or a dumb question, I'm not sure, but how much of Ubuntu Core is reliant on Debian? And then equally, is Ubuntu Core quite separate from Ubuntu Desktop, or are you now kind of using Ubuntu Core as the core for desktop as well?
That's a really good question. Let me lay it out for you. So Ubuntu itself is dependent on Debian. Mm. We source many open source packages, most libraries. The vast majority come in from Debian unmodified. Now, we do make a lot of modifications to certain important packages or libraries. Our tool chain is a bit different. So, you know, there is a distinct Ubuntu-ness of Ubuntu, or else there would be no Ubuntu. There would just be Debian. But we do certainly give props to Debian. You know, we employ a number of Debian developers. We're encouraged to make our changes in both Ubuntu and Debian. I do some development more or less as a hobby these days, but everything that I do in Ubuntu has to go back up to Debian as well. So we definitely depend on Debian. Ubuntu Core depends on Ubuntu. Okay, so I said Ubuntu depends on Debian. Ubuntu Core depends on Ubuntu. The binaries that go into Ubuntu Core, if you were to run MD5SUM or checksum on every binary on the file system inside of Ubuntu Core, just, you know, user bin, for example, you would find binaries that are bit for bit identical to Ubuntu. Okay, that's important because all of the work, all of the engineering, the security, the updates, the bug fixes that filter into Ubuntu make their way into Ubuntu Core as well. Okay. So it's not different binaries. Those are the same. But the way the image is put together is different. Fundamentally, you know, if you're familiar with the Unix Linux system, traditional Ubuntu has a bunch of files installed at root, and if you have the right permissions, you can make changes. You can edit configuration files, it may be inadvisable, but you can start replacing and moving files around the file system itself. That's quite different in the Ubuntu Core world because the root file system itself is a read-only image. All of your root file system is mounted as a read-only squashfs on top of slash, the root partition, and that is immutable. You can't modify that if you want it. You would have to replace that entire underlying read-only image. So basically, our build processes have been adapted for Ubuntu Core to build a root file system, an OS that functions as a read-only operating system. Make sense?
Yeah, sure. I guess in summary, my assumption that Ubuntu Core was at the core of Ubuntu Desktop, it's actually flipped on its head. It's kind of you take the packages from that instead and bring them into Core instead. It's the newer product.
That's right. Yeah. I guess the name could throw you for a loop because it's called Core. You might think that's what's at the core. But I could go into more detail, but I think you've got your head wrapped around it.
Sure.
Now, you asked about desktop. At least for our next release, at least through our next LTS, which is Ubuntu 18.04, that's set to be released in April of 2018. That'll be our 5-year supported LTS. The desktop is now a hybrid between traditional Ubuntu, which is dev-based and that, you know, root can write anywhere type file system, but the desktop now combines both traditional dev packages as well as snap packages. So you wanted to move on to snap.
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity to
let's move forward to snaps. I mean, I guess when I initially encountered them, I thought, well, I still think great idea. I haven't changed my mind, but I thought, what a great idea! This is basically. In my dabbles with Linux, one of my biggest frustrations has always been kind of compatibility of packages for different variants. And, you know, the wonderful thing about the open source world is you have so many options, but that's also one of the biggest problems because it gets super confusing very quickly. And having this in my first viewing was like, oh, it's kind of a universal package format for Linux. Basically making it a lot easier for people to find the applications they need. But now, based on some of this discussion and looking again at the Snapcraft website, and you've got other kind of platforms listed here, which are definitely mostly embedded platforms, I'm now seeing that there's a bit more to it than that. So let's maybe dig in from there.
Yeah, I think you've got you certainly got the right starting point. Maybe slide 13 might be a good slide just to have up in the background here. Where I was going to with the desktop, and this is true of the Ubuntu server, the traditional dev-based Ubuntu server as well, they're both hybrid in the sense that on both Ubuntu desktop and server, you can run both traditional devs as well as snaps. So to date, we've got 50,000 Ubuntu devs, most of which come in through Debian. We've added a few and some softs on top. But then on top of that, we also have the ability to install snaps. So as you said, snaps are a universal packaging mechanism. Snaps can run on lots of different operating systems. We've led this work for Ubuntu, but we've now seen snaps adopted on other other OSs, some of which are some embedded OSs, as you say. The beautiful thing about Snaps, and I say this as an Ubuntu Deb developer and a Debian developer with almost 20 years Linux packaging experience, Snaps are really a redesigned packaging format with modern technology in mind. Devs and RPMs are certainly good at what they're good at, but that technology really stopped innovating in about 1995. And what's beautiful about Snaps is we're taking advantage of a couple of really important security and confinement mechanisms that are present within Linux. That includes AppArmor, which is a mandatory access control system. That includes namespaces, user namespaces, which enables us to map UIDs inside of an application elsewhere. We use seccomp to take care of system calls. And fundamentally, it's almost like containers. It uses some of the same technology in the Linux kernel as containers, but packaging using that container mechanism to secure applications as they're packaged.
Okay. And how, I think, let's stick with Snaps for now. How mature do you consider the, I'm not sure what to call it, the framework, the platform, the whatever you want to call it, how mature do you consider it now?
I think the proof here is in the developer adoption. Mm. If you take a look at slide 16, you can see some of the types and places where Snaps are being used. There's a couple of thousand Snaps as of now. It is a technology that is servicing a wide array from desktop apps like Spotify, which has always been a pain to package the Spotify client on the Linux desktop, to server-side snaps, things like Docker. In fact, Docker itself is packaged as a snap. Kubernetes, we package Kubernetes as a snap, in fact.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's definitely I'm guessing a reasonably large application. And what, so in comparison of packaging something like that for a, well, it's not a desktop, obviously it's typically a server or a virtual machine somewhere, but is there much difference between packaging something like that than packaging something for a small embedded system that has much less capabilities? Are there any kind of different steps, or how does a developer sort of define those requirements and limits?
Yeah, it is a little bit different, especially with devices. Mm. A device snap typically needs access to some part of the system, mm-hmm. right? So a drone device would need access to the sensors, right? Mm-hmm. The camera and the altimeter, and so forth. And so that snap needs to express through a really elegant framework that we've created, that snap would need to express, these are the permissions that I need in order to do the work I want to do, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, in the cloud, that's usually not the case, with some exceptions. In fact, some snaps in the cloud need access to the GPU, for instance, right? So inside of Amazon, you've got these big GPU instances with massive NVIDIA GPUs. We actually can package artificial intelligence or machine learning type applications where that snap expresses a need for, hey, I run better when there's a GPU underneath me, right? So if you can give me access to the GPU, I can run 10, 20 times faster, mm-hmm. for instance. So some of that actually does come across. Now, there are other cloud snaps that don't need any particular hardware access, in which case they're super simple. I've created a number of snaps myself. It's usually a half an hour to an hour long process,
okay.
And that's coming down from my experience creating Debs, which is a day or two. It's typically a day's work to create a good Deb. In the snap case, it's more like an hour's work.
Uh-huh. And I mean, what's the end goal? Are you looking to, at least in Ubuntu, where you have control, to replace apt-get at some point, or will that always be there for some of the more legacy software?
I think it will always be there, in as much as some software is just really good at what it does, and it never needs to do anything else. I do see a point where there's a higher level abstraction that does the right thing. You know, we're quite good at that in Ubuntu, right? Where from a UI and a user experience perspective, we're just trying to help users get stuff done or developers get stuff done. I could easily see an abstraction that says install Spotify was the earlier example, or install Firefox. And the Ubuntu system then makes the decision, hey, would this be better to be done as a deb or a snap? Let me just do the right thing and stay out of the user's way. And then a user who has a particular tendency, you know, a user who really wants the snap version of something or the deb version of something, of course can express that they have a personal preference. But I think what you'll see by Ubuntu 18.04 is an elegant abstraction so that that individual users aren't having to make snap versus deb type decisions. The operating system is doing the right thing on their behalf.
That's actually a really nice point. I mean, I think this is one of the areas where people often struggle with making desktop Linux a good alternative. Is, you know, it's a tinkerer's dream. But if that's a bit beyond you, then it can become a bit of a nightmare. And something that can just figure out the best options for users like that is actually a really fantastic idea. So I guess the problem with the open source community is always you hope that all the developers will be on board with it and make it possible, I guess.
Well, you can rest assured we'll do our part. You know, we're quite focused on that user experience, that developer experience.
Yeah, yeah.
We're proud of our heritage there, but we don't take it for granted. We work very hard to try and keep pushing that envelope, keep moving that ball forward. But you know, I think we've got a fantastic team with a ton of experience, a lot of success behind us, and you know, where we've made mistakes, we've tried to learn from those mistakes and ensure that we do better next time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're probably one of the Linux companies that has made mistakes, but has made mistakes because you were trying something new. And that's never, you sometimes have to try new things to make mistakes. If you never try anything new, well, you're never going to make mistakes, but you'll never change anything either. So
That's right. It's about taking some risk every once in a while.
Sure. On that note, I've got one last question. So on that note,
sure,
just we've had a nice kind of overview of Core and Snaps, but I guess what is kind of next on their roadmap or other new product roadmaps that ties into this or that you want to make sure people know about?
A great question. I think our killer advantage here is going to be the tie-in between the cloud and the devices. So smart devices are rapidly becoming a part of our daily life, and we're seeing massive investment from anywhere from those consumer companies to the industrial and everything in between. Every connected device has to have, by definition, a connection somewhere. It's talking to a service that's running somewhere, most likely in the public cloud, but certainly in other cases, private cloud-type connections make more sense. The technical differentiator for the developers, you know, you said this was a developer audience, what we have going for us is that service in the public cloud or in the private cloud is almost certainly running Ubuntu already today. 70% of the instances in Amazon are running Ubuntu. The developers that are writing the backend services, those REST API endpoints that are receiving the telemetry from the self-driving car or the robot or the drone, that endpoint is almost certainly an Ubuntu endpoint where the developer has chosen Ubuntu to deploy their Python application, their Golang application, or their, you know, Django web framework or something like that. On the other side, though, inside of that device, either in the startup case, it's probably the same developers working on that. In the enterprise case, there's a CIO who's made some key technical, or CTO who's made a couple of key technical decisions that decided on some of the platforms or frameworks. And Ubuntu is extremely well positioned to be a really compatible layer from what's going on inside of the device as well as in the cloud. If we take the smart driving, the self-driving autonomous vehicle as an example, you know, that all of the autonomous vehicles today that we know about in the public are running Ubuntu on the autonomous CPU. There's usually three CPUs in a car these days, one of which is the autonomous CPU. That CPU is across the board running Ubuntu. It's either ARM or it's Intel, and in both cases, the smart driving cars are running Ubuntu. Now, those machines in the car have to make real-time decisions without a connection necessarily. Mm-hmm. When there is a connection, it's able to download and retrieve inference models. You know, the models that are running in the cloud on those NVIDIA GPUs are crunching the numbers and the telemetry being sent by millions of units. And then on a daily or weekly basis, each of those Teslas, each of those Ubers or Lyfts or Google cars are downloading an updated model. The connection between the two, the developer experience of Ubuntu on both is really, I think, you know, you were asking for what's next. Tying that experience together even more closely is I think our key focus and driving the heart of our roadmap right now.
Okay. Excellent. All right. Thanks very much for everyone's time. I'm going to put something together.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious. Any observations here in this space that perhaps we've missed or a gap that you perceive in what we're doing around Ubuntu?
I mean, the thing for me, I sort of hinted at it slightly without wanting to get too blunt about it, was I really like some of the ideas, and often I've tried them and hit problems. And that's been kind of my biggest observation. It's generally in the Linux world, but specifically I was very interested in trying these two technologies, and I try to sort of get started and I hit blocks and I hit problems quite quickly. And sort of it's, yeah, I don't know. It may be because, I was trying Ubuntu Core on a Raspberry Pi and I kept getting network connection issues, and then I had to keep reinstalling because it's sort of, you know, it's aimed at an embedded system. So this is just an assumption that people know what they're doing. And then I was trying something with Snaps, but I was trying Ubuntu installed on an old MacBook. So maybe there were some hardware support issues there. I'm not sure, but I don't know. That's kind of been my main thing, is I sort of really want this stuff to be successful, but every time I try it, I hit issues, and it's always a little bit of a shame that there are still a lot of these issues when people are trying so hard to make Linux more accessible. Yeah, I guess that's my main observation. I don't really have a solution, but yeah. Sure. And I will go
feedback.
And
I
try again.
Yeah, I appreciate that feedback. I'm sorry that was your experience. I can certainly follow up with very specific instructions for Ubuntu Core and the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah,
it is quite straightforward. If you've got an SD card, it's a matter of downloading the image, writing that image,
that was
and then plugging in the Raspberry Pi.
That was the thing that I think, because every time I made a mistake, you have to basically kind of start again. And it took a few periods of trial and error to figure out what the best way to connect was. And I sort of ended up kind of realizing that probably Ethernet was the best network connection. And, you know, but you just, because if you lose the connection to it, it's somewhat hard to actually control the thing anymore, so you have to kind of keep wiping and starting again. So that was the main frustration. But you know, it's an embedded system device. I'm not expecting it to be quite as straightforward as installing a desktop OS. But I think it's more, you know, just more my time is limited for each thing I want to write about. And then when you hit some blocks, you're like, oh, I'll just come back to this later. So, yeah, but I keep wanting to try them, especially with the snaps thing. That is sort of something I find very appealing. And I will have another go. I don't think I've just found a good getting started tutorial that I don't think was there last time I looked. I'm not sure what was there before, so I'm going to take another look at that one.
Something are you looking at tutorials.ubuntu.com?
This was on Snapcraft. Learn to craft your first snap.
Ah, good, good, good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah,
so I'll have another go of that one, I think, and try to put like a little bit of tutorial side into this as well. But yeah.
Chris, that I know that we've been looking at doing is, we can follow up on this separately afterwards, but I know that we were potentially talking about doing kind of a more in-depth tutorial type briefing. So we can chat about that separately in Rima after this, but that's definitely something.
I'll go back and try some things and see if I hit any other issues. A lot of the time it might also be I was trying things in virtual machines and stuff like that. Some proprietary reasons, I am most of the time a dirty Mac user, so sometimes I'm trying things in virtual machines and stuff like that, so which isn't always ideal.